Good morning. Today is Friday, December 31st, and you're listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Taylor Chalstrom. I hope everyone has a happy New Year's Eve, as well as a safe transition into 2022. I also want to take this moment to thank everyone for listening to the report during its first year. We're hoping to make it even better next year. Today's episode features coverage from the 2021 Statewide Pistachio Day, and this time we're covering how common tree stressors are related. But first, we'll start off with today's national and regional news. We'll dive in right after this.
Let your bees carry a beneficial biofungicide directly to flowers and reduce brown rot, blossom blight, and jacket rot. Sign up for a field trial of bee vectoring and the biofungicide Vectorite with CR7 on your almond orchard. Deadline is January 15th for setup and use at the start of your February bloom. Email contact at beevt.com.
In today's national news, earlier this month, United States Representative Abigail Spanberger, a Democrat from Virginia, led a bipartisan effort on the Environmental Protection Agency to delay potential herbicide registration revisions, such as dicamba registrations, that, quote, could exacerbate existing herbicide shortages, threaten the ability of some farmers to plant crops on time, and negatively impact the bottom lines of American farmers and producers in the 2022 growing season, end quote. In a letter sent to EPA Administrator Michael Reagan, Spanberger and 12 of her colleagues in the United States House called on the agency to delay the implementation of any upcoming herbicide registration revisions at this time. Citing nationwide supply chain backlogs and heightened consumer demand, the bipartisan group of lawmakers made clear that such a delay would reduce burdensome costs on American farmers and prevent families from seeing further price increases at the grocery store. The letter stated, quote, "During this period of economic uncertainty caused by the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, taking steps to restrict the number of herbicides that farmers can utilize could seriously exacerbate existing strains on supply chains, leading to shortages, increased demand for already supply-constrained alternatives, price hikes, and significant losses directly to farmers who have already purchased herbicide and seed for the upcoming 2022 growing season. In addition, these restrictions could force farmers to reduce their use of conservation practices such as no-till agriculture that have been instrumental in reaching regional water quality goals, increasing soil carbon sequestration, improving soil quality, and reducing runoff," end quote. To read the full letter, visit spanberger.house.gov. Also in today's national news, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration earlier this month issued a proposed rule that aims to enhance the safety of produce. It proposes to require farms to conduct comprehensive assessments that would help them identify and mitigate hazards in water used to grow produce. This is the latest step in the agency's implementation of the FDA Food Safety Modernization Act, and it proposes to replace some of the existing requirements for agricultural water in the produce safety rule. The proposed rule, if finalized, would change certain pre-harvest agricultural water requirements for produce and farms subject to the PSR, other than sprouts operations. Key provisions in the proposed rule include a requirement for farms to manage their agricultural water quality based on the results of a comprehensive systems assessment that is adaptable to the wide variety of water sources and uses and future scientific advancements. An annual assessment by farms for their pre-harvest agricultural water to identify any conditions likely to introduce hazards into or onto covered produce or food contact surfaces. A requirement that farms implement expedited mitigation measures for hazards related to certain activities associated with adjacent and nearby lands to protect the quality of the water used on produce. And the removal of certain testing requirements for pre-harvest agricultural water and replacing them with the agricultural water assessments. The FDA intends to continue working closely with stakeholders and the state and tribal partners to provide necessary training, technical assistance, education, and outreach. The agency will hold two virtual public meetings to discuss the proposal and hear feedback, and more details will be announced in a forthcoming Federal Register notice. In addition, the agency is also developing an online tool to assist growers in understanding agricultural water assessments. In more national news, if COVID doesn't interfere with demand, prospects for United States cotton look very good for 2022. USDA's Gary Crawford has more.
U.S. cotton growers are wrapping up a year that's seen a remarkable upsurge in market prospects. USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer says it's been all about demand.
We went through a year of pretty good demand and tighter exportable supplies, good production this year, but demand, which has been pretty solid globally, 2.5% growth in cotton demand globally, which to put in context is a pretty strong rebound in demand.
Which is why USDA is forecasting cotton prices this next marketing year to average 90 cents a pound.
That's an amazing price for a season average. And then I think if you dig in a little bit deeper and, you know, you hear folks talking about dollar cotton, those are all very positive things from a producer standpoint.
However, Meyer says one worry for the new year is this resurgence in COVID activity, which could reduce demand for cotton. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
That's it for today's national news. We'll be right back with the day's regional news after this short break.
Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
In today's regional news from UCANR, container get-in at ports cost California farmers $2.1 billion in exports. Recent research estimates that there was a 17% decline in the value of containerized agricultural exports between May and September 2021, resulting from recent port congestion. This amounts to around $2.1 billion in lost foreign sales, which exceeds losses from the 2018 United States-China trade war. By the peak of the disruption in September 2021, nearly 80% of all containers leaving at California ports were empty, about 43% fewer filled containers leaving California's ports than there were prior to the pandemic. And since 40% of filled shipping containers leaving California's ports are filled with United States agricultural products, around a third of which are from California, farmers in the state experienced significant lost export opportunities. By September 2021, there were around 25,000 fewer containers filled with agricultural products leaving California ports than there were in May 2021. Processed tomatoes, rice, wine, and tree nuts saw the sharpest average trade declines. Also in today's regional news, the next segment of Proposition 12 will take effect on January 1st. Proposition 12, California's Farm Animal Confinement Initiative, was approved in 2018 with 63% of the vote. The voters enacted Prop 12 for the stated purposes of treating farm animals humanely and taking precautionary measures to promote food safety by reducing animal density in confined areas. Specific requirements for veal calves and egg-laying hens went into effect on January 1st, 2020. The final phase of Prop 12, with additional requirements for egg-laying hens and a minimum confinement space of 24 square feet for breeding pigs, goes into effect on January 1st, 2022. CDFA's role in the enforcement of Prop 12 is to establish a uniform and transparent method to implement the law through the promulgation of regulations in partnership with the California Department of Public Health. While Prop 12 itself states what confinement standards are required to comply with the law, these regulations create a more streamlined administrative mechanism for demonstrating compliance and will thus ensure that consumers have confidence that products subject to Prop 12 are compliant with the law. It is important to note that the pursuit of criminal and civil penalties for violations of Prop 12 is under the jurisdiction of local district attorneys, city attorneys, county councils, and the Attorney General's office. The state is working to complete the regulatory process as quickly as possible while meeting the legally required steps for issuance of new regulations. CDFA and the California Department of Public Health began this work in December 2018, weeks after the proposition passed. Since then, the agencies have gathered input from stakeholders, held informal workshops and meetings to discuss proposals, conducted an in-depth economic impact study, ensured a complete review of the draft and supporting documents, published draft regulations for comment, held a comment hearing, reviewed comments and amended as appropriate, and republished for comment, all as required by California's Administrative Procedure Act. Some of the next steps you can expect to see: comments on the draft regulations are being reviewed following a recently completed 15-day public comment period. Review is expected to be completed by mid-January 2022. If comments require substantial changes to the regulatory package, they may open another comment period on the updated language. When this part of the process is complete, they'll send the final draft regulations along with all public comments and responses to them to California's Office of Administrative Law. Upon approval by the OAL, the regulations will be sent to the Secretary of State's office to be published, the final step of the process. More in today's regional news. Early winter storms provide much-needed Sierra snowpack. Yesterday, the Department of Water Resources conducted the first snow survey of the season at Phillips Station. Early winter storms this month provided a strong start to the season and some drought relief, but California remains in a drought. Yesterday's manual survey recorded 78.5 inches of snow depth and a snow water equivalent of 20 inches, which is 202% of average for this location on this date. The snow water equivalent measures the amount of water contained in the snowpack and is a key component of DWR's water supply forecast. Statewide, the snowpack is 160% of average for the state. Californians only need to look to last winter and the state's disappointing snowpack runoff due to high temperatures, dry soil, and evaporation as a reminder that changes to the climate mean it will take more than an average year to recover from drought. December is the first of the three typically wettest months of California's water year. Significant January and February precipitation would be required to generate enough runoff to make up for the previous two winters that were California's fifth and second driest water years on record. California has experienced wet Decembers before, only to have storms disappear for the remainder of the season. In 2013, the first snow survey provided promising results after a wet December, similar to this year. However, the following January and February were exceptionally dry, and the year ended as the driest on record, contributing to a record-breaking drought. On average, the Sierra snowpack supplies about 30% of California's water needs, and the snowpack is an important factor in determining how DWR manages the state's water resources. Its natural ability to store water is why the Sierra snowpack is often referred to as California's, quote, frozen reservoir. DWR conducts 5 media-oriented snow surveys at Phillips Station each winter near the first of each month from January through April and, if necessary, May. That's it for today's national and regional news. We'll be right back after this short break with coverage from the 2021 Statewide Pistachio Day.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Pistachio trees have long been known for their ability to withstand tough environmental conditions. How they adapt to environmental stress and what that means for commercial yields was discussed by UCCE Orchard Systems Specialist Julia Marino in a 2021 Pistachio Day presentation. When there is a change in the environmental conditions in an orchard, Marino noted, there is a physiological adaptation. The changes impacting a tree's health can include a reduction in the chill hours during dormancy, elevated soil or water salinity, extreme heat or water logging. A tree's response may impact its productivity. When thinking about water stress to pistachio trees, though, it's important to note that pistachios are a dual behavior tree in regards to water use. They are a drought-tolerant species with elevated water consumption. As water stress intensifies, leaf water use is reduced. To demonstrate this, Marino compared pistachio orchards in Sicily, where trees received 4 inches of water, with San Joaquin Valley orchard systems, where 40 inches of applied water is common. Yields in the San Joaquin Valley are much higher, Marino noted, but the water productivity for the crop in Sicily is much higher.
The left system is an agricultural system in Sicily again. This is irrigated with supplemental irrigation, just 4 inches throughout the season. And the orchard can produce 1,600 kilograms per hectare, while the one in the right is an orchard in California that is fully irrigated and it can use up to 40 inches of water, increasing the yield, of course, of the system, where it can arrive up to 3,000 kilograms per hectare. The plant, the trees, is able to use a bigger amount of water and produce more, but at the expense of the efficiency of the water use. So water productivity would decrease.
Marino explained why this happens, noting that pistachio leaves have stomata both in the upper and lower layers of the leaves.
When water is available, it performs peak of transpiration. The peak of transpiration do not correspond to higher photosynthesis. And if we see this relationship between stomata conductance, so how much water the stomata let pass, and as a rate, and the rate of photosynthesis is clear that is like a curvilinear relationship. So at one point, even if you apply more water, the plant will use it without increasing the photosynthetic performance. So the capability to fix carbon for productivity and growth.
Additionally, when thinking about the phenology of drought resistance in pistachio trees, pistachios have multiple stages: nut growth and leaf expansion in stage 1, shell hardening and trunk growth in stage 2, embryo filling in stage 3, and finally senescence at the end of the season. It just so happens that with pistachio trees, stage 2, the shell hardening and trunk growth, is the most drought resistant stage and needs to be considered when managing pistachio trees in a drought year.
And there is one specific stage of development that we call shell hardening, or stage 2, happening around June, when pistachio is very resistant for two reasons. First, because some physiological change happens that allow pistachio to get less affected by the stress. They concentrate solute in some organs, and this allows the trees to perform higher photosynthesis, even if they have less water, if they are more stressed. Second, is a moment when there are not happening important physiological process associated with productivity. So main vegetative growth happened before that moment, and embryos still didn't start to grow. So even if we reduce a little bit the performance of the orchard in terms of carbon assimilation, we are not affecting important process associated with productivity.
Something important that Marino noted is the impact on yield with respect to water use. Of course, there will always be a certain amount of water that can be applied, the maximum water use, before yields start to decline. Using the most water isn't necessarily conducive of the most yield. And this, Marino said, falls under the idea of efficient water use in pistachio.
When we want to do an efficient irrigation, we cannot rely just on the T and KC. We have to be more precise, both in terms of the spatial variability. As Isaiah was saying, there are tools for doing this. And also in terms of detecting stress, because we want to keep the plants in a level of stress that would allow to reduce the impact on productive performance on the orchard. And this is more complex than just applying the full water use, the ET, the crop ET. However, even if it's complex, I strongly believe that this is the future, and the advancement of technology and sociological and environmental push will bring us in this direction in the next year. So the information that we want still to develop in this sense are for sure improve our knowledge about how to use continuous and precise plant-based monitoring, because a few studies have been done on pistachio with respect to other crops. And the technology transfer, because these tools are still too complicated to be used easily or in a grower-friendly way. We want to adapt irrigation to the physiology of the tree. So shall irrigation be adapted to the yield of the crop, of the orchard? So should we consider alternate bearing to and tailor irrigation on this condition or phenology? multi-year irrigation, and then post-harvest, May and Bruce Lampin, and they started some project in this sense. We want to have cultivar and rootstock specific protocol because we have several new cultivar available. We don't know how they responded to stress, and then better information on what is the water use and how to manage younger trees.
Marino also discussed pistachio's ability to be salt tolerant. Pistachio is more salt tolerant than other tree crops like olive, citrus, almond, and plum, with the only other tree crop being more salt tolerant, date palm. However, she said the response of pistachio to salinity tolerance is much more complex in these crops.
We know in the most intuitive way salinity affects pistachio performance is through the osmotic effect. This means that the salt in the soil will make the water less available to the plant. And the plant has to do an effort to uptake the water. Now, this is my experience with pistachio. I've been doing a lot of stem water potential measurement on saline and non-saline pistachio orchard. And in reality, yes, saline orchards are more stressed, but there is not a big difference in terms of stem water potential. And even if you see, and if you are familiar with stem water potential measurement, that these values are not considered stressed value for pistachio until minus 1.5 megapascal in general is like a range that is acceptable for pistachio water management. So pistachio as physiological adaptation is good in uptaking water, even if this water is not easily available in the soil. Another impact is the ion-specific effect. This is this water uptake, the water will bring ion inside the plant, and these ions will arrive to the leaves, affecting leaves' performance, either toxicity effects, or direct imbalance of hormones, or, for example, they can reduce photosynthesis and transpiration. Now, this effect arrives later in the season and later in the lifespan of a pistachio orchard. But also in this, pistachio is very good in partitioning the salt. It's able to block them and partition them, create some layer to don't allow them to go up and keep them in the root system. Now, both this effort, this physiological response that the pistachio apply to uptake water to partition the ion cost energy to the plant. So in the long term, we're going to have smaller orchard. The plants will not grow as orchards that are not or that are on non-saline soil. And this picture shows very well how after 30 years of salinity, in the case of the last picture on the bottom right, the canopy cover is only 27% with respect to the first picture on the left up is an orchard that had the same age, but it was on a non-saline soil. This will be one of the most important factors affecting on the long-term productivity in a pistachio orchard. Another important factor that I am gonna briefly discuss, the fact that salinity can affect soil structure. This is associated more to the quality of the salt, not to the quantity. So a much sodium with respect to calcium and magnesium. And when the soil structure is compromised, water doesn't penetrate well in the soil, this can create a hypoxic condition that can be very a main limiting factor for pistachio performance.
In terms of orchard management for salinity and pistachio, tolerant rootstocks and cultivars are going to be key. Patrick J. Brown is currently working on this at UC Davis. Also, winter leaching, soil amendments, and better water management are going to be key. Lastly, Marino discussed the impacts of waterlogging on an orchard, which are similar to drought, but less reversible. They include decay of root systems, leaching of nutrients, and interruption of carbohydrate transport.
When too much water is applied to the soil or the water doesn't percolate, the soil doesn't drain this water, all the macropore are filled with the water, and this water displaces gases. This is a typical condition, as we saw, for saline condition or sodic and saline soil, can be a consequence of compaction or over-irrigation.
The question is, what happens when gases are misplaced in the soil and there is no air? Availability and concentration of nutrients can be affected by lower redox potential and increased pH, and a reduction of oxygen can either limit through hypoxia or inhibit through anoxia root respiration. Root respiration is the driving force for most of the root metabolic activities that also directly control the above-ground crop performance. From a physiological point of view,
photosynthesis is impaired directly, stomatal conductance as well for signals sent from the root to the canopy. There is a limited water uptake from the root, so plants will be water stressed. Transport of carbohydrate can be affected. We can see strong, big increase of vegetative growth. And the early leaf senescence until the decay of the root system that would bring to the death of the plant. Interesting that all these symptoms are shared or are common to the effect of drought on plant physiology, but they are less reversible. And most important of all, there is no information of pistachio, so we don't have studies that really proved or tried to test what are the threshold of oxygen that would affect pistachio physiology and what pistachio can stand in terms of low level of oxygen in the ground.
Marino ended with the sentiment that in the real world, all of these stressors interact with each other, whether it's a potential negative or potential positive or even a potential neutral reaction.
There is never just a drought. There is never just salinity. In reality, environmental stressors happen together and they co-interact in affecting pistachio physiology and performance. And understanding their interaction is a very difficult experimental complex and they require big replication. And often the interaction doesn't have one only response, like the interaction between boron and salinity sometimes can be positive, sometimes can be negative. And again, in this sense, T.B. Gordon will start a project where we will check the interaction between boron, flooding and salinity. But as I said, these are very difficult experiments because of the big amount of replication. But it's something we have to spend more energy as researcher because it's what really happened in the field after all.
That about wraps up our show today. Thank you for listening. This is Taylor Chalstrom reporting for My Ag Life.
Being a member of the California walnut industry means working together to advance the industry through advocacy, research programs, and promoting walnuts with smart, cost-effective marketing, activities that are often too big for one operation to tackle on its own. There are unique ways the California Walnut Board and Commission deliver value. For example, health research gives consumers more reasons to believe in walnuts, while new and improved walnut varieties and production methods increase profitability, and it ensures the issues facing our industry are in the front of government decision makers. Learn more at walnuts.org.
Salty, closed soils can render your crops unproductive. Desal, formulated by AgroPlante, is specially designed for sodic and saline sodic soils. Desal will displace sodium and wash it out of the root zone with irrigation to enhance your soil structure, water penetration, and vitality by decreasing soil salinity. AgroPlante's Desal flocculates your soil to promote soil aeration and drainage. With Desal, you'll create a better soil environment for your crop roots and optimize yield. Contact AgroPlante today to find out more at 559-498-0388 or visit us at agroplante.com.